Howdy, y'all. You're listening to the Managing Up Show, a podcast about leading and managing in the world of technology. I'm your host, Travis Weisgood, and with me tonight are Brandon Hayes.
Hello.
And Nick Means.
Hey, everybody. So the other day, I ran across a thread on Y Combinator News. You know, we all say we don't read it, but we all look at it occasionally. And I ran across a thread that struck me as actually good. It was a thread, and the premise was, what are the signs that you have a great manager? And it was interesting because it was written very much from an engineer's perspective. And that's a perspective that we don't get very often as managers. We don't hear software engineers talk about the most effective managers they've had and what made them great. And as Brandon and I were talking about this, Brandon read through the thread and tweeted back at me that the consensus he saw among these messages was that good management is invisible and feels like the team is rocking, not the manager. And that started an interesting conversation around the idea that a lot of the most important work that software engineering managers do is actually invisible to people outside of their team in the organization. Brandon, what I'm going to throw it to you and ask what we mean when we talk about that kind of invisible work.
That's a really good question. But I think most people who have managed know the feeling. It's almost more of a feeling than it is a concrete thing, because it's the mortar in between the bricks. Everybody knows what the bricks are of management work, with one-on-ones and project management type stuff and things that have a concrete output. They result in a wiki page or something. But there's a lot of work in managing teams that feels like you're putting really important mortar in between these bricks that nobody knows about making sure that you're hearing the right types of conversations so that you have the data to bring back to the team in the form of like context about their work, or you're just building relationships with people, or you're building trust in some way with someone, or you're resolving trust issues with somebody. And these don't feel like concrete tasks to do. And when you look back at your week, I think everybody knows the feeling of looking back at your week and going, it didn't, you know, unlike being an engineer, you don't have a stack of pull requests that you can go, yeah, all right. You know, you dust your hands off and, you know, your hands, uncramp your hands from keyboard strain, and you're like just feeling pretty good about having done a good week's work for a good week's pay. It's a lot more nuanced than that. And the effects of your work are harder to see as well. The effects of your work aren't a concrete pull request. The effects of your work is hopefully that you have a team that feels productive. Like, what does that mean? Your team could feel productive and not be productive. Your team could be productive and not feel productive. So there is a very difficult to quantify personal measure that I feel as a manager sometimes when I'm looking at the past week and wondering, hey, was this a good week? Did I accomplish what I set out to do? And I might have gotten the team quarterly meeting planned, and I have a plan for that, and that's great, and that feels good to ship something. But also, the biggest value I might have delivered that week had nothing to do with any of those pieces of output, but resolving a tricky interpersonal issue that actually put, you know, a potential project at risk. And, you know, how do you quantify that? What does a successful manager look like? And if you can't quantify that, how do you tell your manager, I'm good at this and I deserve a promotion or whatever, you know? So that can feel very stifling and limiting. And I think this isn't something we do super well as an industry.
I mean, this is one of the things that new managers struggle with as well, right? The shift from direct productivity. I shipped code today. I delivered a new feature. I did tangible work with my keyboard that I can point to and say I did things today. To that sort of more meta productivity type of productivity that a manager actually has by enabling and empowering a team. And yeah, you're right. There are obvious tangible things, like you can look at a manager's calendar and tell that they're doing work, but you can't tell by looking at a manager's calendar if they're actually being productive.
Right. Those meetings might be counterproductive, you know? I've met very busy managers before that were not as great at their job as they probably thought they were.
Yeah, I've always viewed that as an anti-pattern. When I see a manager of any stripe who has a double or triple booked calendar most of the time, if they're that booked and that spoken for, they're not having time to step back and look at the big picture and make sure and do that self-evaluation and that reflection and have that bigger impact. They're just kind of going along with whatever's yelling at them right now.
I mean, one of the things that we often talk about is sort of the difference between tactical work and strategic work. And I think that's a lot of what you're getting at in saying that, Travis, is the idea that as a manager, you do need time to sit down and think and actually plot out the direction that your team is going and help them think through the direction of whatever software it is that you're building is going.
Yeah. And even beyond the big picture thinking, just the ability to randomly ping a team member and ask them, hey, how's it going? And have that informal conversation and something that's not part of a structured one-on-one, and try to take the temperature of the team and the individuals on it. If you're just running from one meeting to the next and relying on Google's short meeting scheduler to give you just a little bit of breathing room between each meeting, you're never going to have time to take the temperature of the team, and things are going to creep up on you that you weren't even aware of.
And on that same note, I don't remember where I'm stealing this from, because it's certainly not an original thought, but I have either read or heard somewhere that a manager's job is to be available. And there are a lot of people that will tell you what a manager's job is and is not to do. But I do think that one measure of a successful manager, if you were to like glue all the pieces together and try to create a framework for what, you know, what constitutes the activities that a manager does, or how do you measure their output? One that's very difficult to measure is availability. Like that the team would say, my manager is available when I need them. If that's low, like you're kind of saying, that's the anti-pattern. If that's too high, it probably means you're not doing enough, you know? So there's somewhere in the middle, if you're managing individuals, that availability matters. And that feels really weird to try to protect and preserve, like, because you need thinking time, you're going to be in meetings, you're reaching out to people. So like somehow structuring your, you know, environment so that you feel to people to be available. Like, hey, I'm here for you when you need me. That's another one of those things that's super invisible, but I bet teams, it didn't pop up in that list on Hacker News, but I bet when people talk about, I am more productive and when my manager's there on my behalf, I think availability is one of those components.
I think the first place I remember hearing that called out is in Paul Graham's Maker Time versus Manager Time essay. If I remember right, what he says there is that one of a manager's jobs is to be interruptible, which is another way of saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's to be available when your team needs you. The interesting thing about that is there is merit to the idea of having enough calendar margin so that your team will be able to get a hold of you when they need to. But there is a far less measurable thing in building up the trust and rapport that your team will come interrupt you when there is bad news or when they need help with something. How do you quantify that? How do you figure out that kind of an impact that a manager is having?
Yeah. How do you measure the trust that the team has that it's worth bringing to you? That you're not going to, not only are you not going to kill the messenger, that this information, by making it to you, things are going to get better in some way. And that's a very slow process. And this is why a lot of the before the call, Nick, you and I were talking about Andy Grove's apparently legendary by now book, High Output Management. And a friend of mine who's managing at a big giant company is reading that book, and it kind of jibes with their culture there. And yes, it's potentially problematic 20th century thinking in a lot of ways, but there is something to be said for the basically central thesis of the book that the way to measure a manager's output is the output of the team. So the output of your team is how you quantify. Well, that indicator sucks. Because it is probably the only, like, I think you said it best when you said it's the only accurate indicator. It's one of, you know, but it's also the laggiest and like least efficient indicator. There's lots of reasons that you may be getting, you know, you can take a sample and yes, the team's output is a very accurate measure of whether management is successfully shepherding this team. But it's also might be a measurement of how the management was doing last year when they set all the dominoes up and they're falling today. And so like, it really sucks to be in a position where you're kind of trying to turn the corner, help a team turn the corner, and you don't, you know, your output isn't showing those results yet, but you know, you're doing the right thing. That's a really tricky place to find yourself. And I don't actually have a good answer for how to push back on organizations that may or may not get that.
Well, and the interesting thing about that is that to some organizations, that's actually a fairly sophisticated way to measure the output of a manager. There are some organizations that don't quite even have the maturity to do that and measure their managers just by the level of activity that they see them doing. How much do they see them writing? How much do they see them doing things around the organization? And there's really no measure of if that's productive or not. It's just, are you doing stuff?
Oh, and the other one you mentioned earlier that I love is, does your team like you? Like, well, hopefully not too much. Because that might mean you're over-optimizing in some areas at the expense of others.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the ideas when we were kind of shooting the breeze about what we might want to talk about tonight. One of the ideas of how you might measure a team is like, you know, a lot of organizations do surveys and, you know, how much do you like your manager? There's a lot of different ways to phrase the question, but ultimately they kind of turn into a manager popularity contest. And if I'm being measured quarterly on the question of, do I like my manager? And I get tens across the board on that, I might not be doing my job all that well.
And there's definitely a safety angle to that. We actually did run a survey at my prior job where I thought, oh, let's find out how, because I was trying to take the samples and I was actually borrowing everything from the book Accelerate by Dr. Nicole Forsgren and some other people. And one of the sets of questions was about manager skill and manager, you know, the perceived skill and abilities and helpfulness of management. Like I am, you know, they help me do my job. I don't remember the exact questions, but we literally just lifted them word for word out of Nicole's survey. So we ran that survey and our results came back and it was a smallish team. So you're not going to get clean data, but the results came back out of like, you know, 35 responses. We're really happy with the response rate. And then 2/3 of the people left all the management stuff blank. Like,
wow.
Boy, what a damning survey result that was of the trust on the team between management and the rest of the people on the team. Like that doesn't feel good because it's like, they don't even feel like they can give us that feedback about our performance as a management team in the first place. So,
wow.
Yeah, not a great brag, not one of my all-time wins, but it's certainly worth noting that people probably are going to be, you know, when you do try to take a sample, you're going to get crappy results. Like you're, you know, asking people, am I doing a good job as your manager? They're like, if I could plead the fifth, I would. Otherwise, I'm just going to say, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wonder if there's anybody out there that's done sort of a longitudinal survey on this, where they've done this kind of periodic survey and coupled it with output of a team to understand what those survey responses actually meant. That would be fascinating to see.
I would love to see more of the data. This may be worth fishing for. They were really trying to, they do this with the State of DevOps report, and they do kind of gather this over a longer period of time. I'd be really, and they couple it with output data. So I'd be really curious to see specifically, I think this is probably, this wasn't the point of the book, but it's a component of it. And I'll be really curious to see more of that data because it's kind of across the industry. So yeah, there's definitely, this is a, like a little, like baby area of the industry that hasn't really been deeply invested in or measured. Or so we're sort of like, you kind of know that if you're managing engineers right now, that this is not a, it's probably not the most mature part of your entire organization. And so figuring out how to teach your organization how to measure your effectiveness and output, they're usually kind of open to it. So I think all the good news out of all of this discussion is, the bad news is, the current situation kind of sucks and makes you feel a lot of the time like you don't know if you're doing a good job and don't know if you're fulfilling the requirements for to be on a promotion track or whether you're even, you know, performing at your job very well. But the good news is, if you're willing to put a little elbow grease in and look for what the performance characteristics of a good manager are and increase your confidence in what you should be doing there, you can often coach your organization on how to, like, explain to them where, you know, why you're spending your time the way that you are. And it winds up being a little more of a partnership. So it's fun to have that kind of influence, but it's also kind of like, you know, if you don't have a great support structure, it can be feel a little bit like being stranded by your organization.
So let's do the risky thing. Let's wade into the land of the hypothetical a little bit and talk about, in a perfect world, how would you measure the output of a manager? How would you understand the kind of job that a manager is doing?
So for me, the thing that I've used, and it's not to say this is a, I don't have a scale of A to F or something like that, but I've taken and looked at the retention levels on a team as an indicator of, as a lagging indicator, I will say, but as an indicator of team cohesion, and that coupled with output of the team. If you have a good manager, and there's a lot of different things that that manager could be doing that would make them good for that particular team, the team's going to ship. They're going to get code out the door. And I'm operating from a place where I'm assuming the fundamentals of the software engineering organization are in place that you can ship code. But assuming there's no institutional roadblocks to getting code out the door, the team is going to ship and people are going to stick around, or they're going to leave on really good terms. They're going to leave because they got a promotion to a different part of the organization or took a promotion that was just something that wasn't available and did the, I'll stick around for as long as you need me to kind of giving notice. When you have those two things in place, that's the thing that I've always looked for in managers that have reported to me. I want those two working together. If you can manage both of those, you're doing a pretty decent job. But that leaves, there's a huge gulf of those two metrics and all of the things that you could possibly be doing to get to that. But I think that speaks quite a bit to the difference in teams. When you put a group of five people together in a room, it's going to be completely different than a room with another five people in it. And you can't really say exactly for sure, this is what you need to be doing to make that work.
So if I were to boil down what I think the job is for me, I'm obviously going to bias it in my favor to, you know, to favor the stuff that I value and either am good at or am working to be better at. And so like, this is going to not speak to my blind spots, but I think the manager's job in my experience is like creating a culture of safety where, and where trust can form naturally, where you're like, I view managers much more of a gardener than a hunter gatherer type. The this is part of what, like, how do you measure the output of a farmer? Well, I'll tell you in 6 months when it's harvest time, you know, like that's a difficult thing to measure unless you know what the valuable activities are in spring to know what the harvest is going to look like in the fall. To me, that's what the fundamental challenge that we're talking about here is. And I have a vague understanding of what those things are. I think obviously making sure that the team is set up to ship is rule number one. That, you know, hey, we're going to get software out the door. If we don't do that, then we're not a software team. We're not getting paid to do anything. But there's a culture of safety on the way to do that, that you can foster and cultivate that allow people to trust each other. How do you measure whether people feel safe? I wish I had a better answer than surveys and stuff like that. It's the cop-out answer, but honestly, like based on the fact that PhDs within the hard sciences are coming in and saying, hey, we're going to use surveys a lot to answer a lot of questions and you should actually trust them scientifically. And if people haven't, I think if there is a manager out there that hasn't heard of or even at least skimmed through the manager-focused chapters of the book Accelerate, please do that. There's a lot of really good stuff in there. And there's a ton more activities, I would say, you could measure a manager's output. But overall, I would categorize them as removing obstacles. You know, what is the obstacle removal rate? You know, are you removing obstacles for your team at a, like if there was a way to measure the rate at which you're pulling obstacles from your team on their behalf so that they can actually stay unblocked? Like what percentage of your time, of your team's time is spent blocked on things that a manager could and should be unblocking for them would be a really strong indicator in some ways that a manager is using their time. But again, all of these things are balanced against each other. They tension each other. And if all you're doing is unblocking obstacles, then you're not doing a bunch of the context gathering that should be done. And if all of those things can happen and the team loses focus on what the ultimate goal was. And part of your job as a manager is to help the team refocus and align with the rest of the organization. So that's a big non-answer, but I think there are like two or three things that you could probably put in place to measure and pull against each other to say, these are the kinds of activities that here and in this organization are patterns that successful managers use to have a healthy and successful harvest 6 months from now. And if you're not doing those things in any If we're not seeing enough of those inputs coming into this thing, I'm concerned about the output 6 months from now. But then 6 months from now, if there's a big harvest and you go, hey, I did this differently, but you're probably going to be happy with the results, then, you know, you can break the measures.
Yeah, it's interesting talking about psychological safety. One of the indicators that I look for myself to understand how good a job I'm doing at building rapport with the team is how often I'm hearing dissenting information or getting pushback from some idea that I'm delivering into the team or from some team consensus. Because if everybody's agreeing with me all the time, then I'm not doing a very good job of building rapport. And if everybody's agreeing with each other all the time and there's never any conflict in our conversations, then we don't have a very psychologically safe culture. Now, I have no idea how you could wrap that up in a leading indicator, but man, I would love it if you could. That would be data that I would love to see on an ongoing basis.
So I think one of the things that happens a lot of times, though, when people point to indicators like that to as a value of psychological safety is you end up with that being the refuge of scoundrels where, well, I'm just trying to make sure I increase the psychological safety by sowing discord. So I'm always a little hesitant to use that as a metric. You see this play out in the engineering world with the Linus Torvalds of the world who just rip code to shreds. Well, I'm just trying to make it better. That's always been his main argument in why he's as critical as he is. And how would you balance? I have a pretty good feeling that you would be able to balance that yourself, Nick, but how would you help a new manager who might have a tendency to push a little bit too hard and try to create that conflict? How'd you help them balance that so that they're not creating a divisive culture?
I think the thing is that you can't explicitly ask for it. You can't go out and explicitly say, I need someone to dissent here. We're all in agreement and that's not okay. which would be the temptation on the surface value if that was a metric. I mean, anytime you wrap a metric around anything, you're risking introducing a perverse incentive into the system. And so that's always something that you have to be careful of. But yeah, it's in building psychological safety, it's not about the amount of conflict that you create. It's about the amount of discussion that happens and if people who dissent feel comfortable bringing their opinions to the table. And so that would be my coaching to a new manager on this specifically is it's not about getting your team to fight. That's not what we want here. We just want to make sure that all the ideas are being discussed and that we can have constructive conversations about these things so that you are getting all of the inputs and the team is getting all of the inputs needed to make good decisions.
So years ago, I was interviewing for a job and one of the founders said, yeah, I just don't see you as a manager. You're too nice. How do you take people who have that tendency towards niceness and not wanting to rock the boat and help give them a little bit of a nudge?
So I can speak as a recovering nice person. I remember working with a person, and I don't remember what he labeled himself, but he was like the, you know, he had a bad cop, good cop thing going with me that he was really happy with. He called himself, you know, the hammer of justice or something, and I was the ambassador of hugs. And that wasn't a dynamic that I enjoyed very much. It felt good at first, and then I ran a business. And one of my employees was like, oh yeah, I used to work for these two guys. They were so nice, the company went out of business. And I was like, boy, that actually rings really true to me. As a nice person trying to run a business, it turns out it's like the scene from the movie Roadhouse, where the bouncer guy is like, I want you to be nice until it is time to not be nice. And I think that's a cute way to say it, but really, like, niceness to me, this is a little bit of a tangent, and I want to make sure that we come back to, like, how do you sort of measure effectiveness around this or know if you're doing a good job. But it's relevant because I think a lot of managers, especially in those first couple years, really think that if you are nice to your team and you're building rapport with them and I'm staying in rapport with them, then you're doing a good job. Because I'm built, you know, like, there are so many moral quandaries that you get stuck in your first year or two of management where you're like, I am trying to stay in rapport with this person so they will trust me to bring me hard, you know, feedback later that I can give them hard feedback. And I, you know, like, I want to have a high trust relationship with them, and they won't trust me if they think I'm just a big meanie that is like a command and control jerk, you know, jerk face or whatever. So there's a huge temptation to be that nice person, especially if you have a people pleasy type personality like I have historically. And then, you know, life, you know, running a business will really wring a lot of that out of you because you don't want to go out of business and suddenly you have to fire clients and people. And so learning to be honest as a, you know, like the right out of the opening story out of radical candor, being able to tell somebody a truth that people had held back for niceness sake, the least kind thing you can do is be too nice. So niceness is actually a hugely pathological thing I've seen in a lot of teams where I've been attracted to teams of people that are nice to each other. And what that often means is actually it's the artificial harmony and lack of conflict. Like, it's actually a red flag of that form of dysfunction. Like, there are lots of ways that you might be able to suss that out, but like, how do you measure whether there's healthy conflict on your team? I don't know, but I know that people feel it. It's like there is a line, like you said, the Linus Torvalds on one side, where the conflict is unhealthy, and then there's healthy conflict, and then there's artificial niceness. And I wish I knew how to quantify that in some way, but I know that everybody knows that the difference when you're there.
Yeah. I mean, ruinous empathy is a warm and cozy blanket, and it feels really good to snuggle up with it. But in the end, it's ruinous for a reason. It will kill any effort to get anything done because you just can't be that nice as a team and actually make progress on anything of worth.
And somebody will get fired, mm-hmm. and it will be a surprise. Mm-hmm. That story has a known ending.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I've done to suss this out of teams in the past, I tend to ask reverse behavioral interview questions when I'm in interviews and ask things like, tell me about the last conflict you had as a team. Tell me about the last thing you disagreed with a coworker about, to kind of pull some of those stories out. And it's important when you ask those questions to leave them super open-ended so that people can pick what they want to tell you about and go into some detail. And you got to keep drawing detail out until you get the understanding of just what kind of conflict it was. Because if they can't come up with a story, there's a chance the team's too nice. If they come up with a story that gets nasty in a hurry, well, then you found a team that has conflict in some ways that are not very healthy. But if they have a good discussion around ways that they've conflicted and the ways that they've progressed out of that conflict, then that's probably a team that has a healthy culture of dissent and disagreement and decision making.
So some of these things are cross-cutting concerns across any team that you're likely to go manage within this or most any industry, which is why management books are often broadly applicable. Because, you know, human psychology is, you know, hasn't shifted a lot in the last couple hundred thousand years. But also, I think there's a component of this that is difficult because different organizations have different sets of values. And I think a part of a manager's job is to uphold and sort of reinforce the values of the company. So like, I know, Nick, you're at GitHub. I know one of their cultural values is quality. And I've worked at other places where quality maybe wasn't wrapped up into their cultural values of the company as a you know, first tier concern. And if a manager is not upholding that value in one organization, that's fine. And in another organization like GitHub, it's not fine because they've, for whatever reason, they've determined that's an important, that's so important that it's baked into the values of the organization. And I don't know how you measure, you know, the upholding of those values, but it's actually a little easier because now you're categorizing these and saying, hey, I'm going to run through a list and see how is your team positively impacted on each of these value areas. I don't know if y'all have any of that in the sort of like a review thing or, but if you were basically surveying around you in let's say a different job and looking at managers that were effective in that specific organization, effective in terms of upholding those values. And I'm trying to think of like specific examples from my experience, but I gotta say from my experience, most of the managers that I've worked with that I haven't been super thrilled with their effectiveness have actually been because they're too nice. Like that's like the number one thing.
I mean, it's interesting that you bring up quality. We also have the conflicting value of shipping, and those are very much in tension. So really a manager's job with those two values at GitHub is to find the right balance in the portion of the code base that they're working. And I think that is the essence of where we get into these productive conflicts is, how good do we need to make this? How much time should we spend on this thing? How polished does this feature need to be before we can put it out to our users and start getting feedback on it? And one of a manager's primary jobs is to facilitate those conversations to help a team make those decisions productively.
What you're describing, Nick, works really well in a established organization like GitHub, who's done that introspection as an organization and come up with the values and start to give you some things that you might be able to grab as a hook to determine if this is something that you're meeting the expectations of the organization on. Not every organization is going to have something like that. And I think this is where thinking about a career ladder, and not just for developers, but for everyone through the organization, all the way up to wherever it stops, whether it's a director or a VP or a CTO or what have you. I think having those values and then, okay, this is what we value as a team, as a company. And then the next step to that process is ask yourself, okay, well, how do we actually understand this? Like, what's an example of it, if nothing else? And that starts to give you a little bit of a rubric with which you can use to judge yourself. If open source contribution is a thing that you value as a team and as a company, how are you going to measure that for a developer? And how are you going to measure whether or not a manager is doing that, somebody that's not shipping code? And then you start to get into the, okay, well, they're actually setting up a space and creating the environment where their developers can do this. And the team has this many open pull requests against projects that we use. And you start to have those conversations where you can really drill down into some meaningful metrics.
I really like that idea of putting up measures of some kind of a team's actual performance in these different categories, some of which may be specific to an organization, many of which may be, you know, cross-cutting. The idea of putting those measures in place for a team and saying, manager, you're in charge of these things. You're helping garden this. People are in charge of doing this, but if it's hard for them to do it, they are not going to. So part of your job is to make it easier to do those things. If it's write a blog post or contribute to open source or ship high quality software while making sure that things get to production. I think there are a few things that I'm reasonably confident are good measures, but I think organization, that is going to be different.
And I think this is something that a new manager can jump in on. If you're in an organization that doesn't have it, you're not going to be able to make all of the same promises and guarantees that an organizational career ladder is going to be able to give when you have a HR signing off on something. But as a team, you can say, okay, this is how we want to measure ourselves and come together as a team and try to come up with what those metrics are and how those feed into the rest of the business and have everybody agree on it. And I think we were talking about psychological safety earlier. If you put yourself out there too, and you're included in this career ladder, even if it is just for your team, and you're putting some of the metrics that you have control over, that's going to signal to the team that, hey, I'm putting myself out here too. I'm being vulnerable. This isn't just something for me to grade you on. I'm expecting you to hold me accountable to this as well.
Yeah. I think going in front of the team and letting them know that you co-own this, that you are a co-owner of these things with them, that you're all in the same trench together and you're not the person like pointing in a direction for them to jump into the trenches. And I'll see you back at home when it's nice, where I'm nice and safe. Like, letting them know that you're not, you know, you're exposing your vulnerability as much as they are in those situations is actually, that's a really important form of making sure that you're able to be trusted. Because how do you trust the person that's like, you know, sitting in an armchair trying to drive their team by remote control? And in addition to availability, presence, like just being present for, you know, I've actually been called out on that, especially when I was managing way too many people. Hey, you're not in the meetings where these weird things are happening and I'm not having, you know, we had a bad interaction with somebody and you weren't there just to even see it. I've definitely had that feedback from people that they hope you will be present for some of those things so you can have your boots on the ground with them so that you can experience some of the things that they experience. You don't actually have to be in the code with them to know that their jobs are hard, but you should be sharing more context than sitting in an office or sitting in a separate location somewhere, directing troop movements on a big giant board with little soldiers on it that you're moving in a war room style. I've been sandbagging a little bit because I actually have like 15 things that I've written down about how I would measure the effectiveness of a manager, because this question bothers me so much of the time. I've been working on this for like months, and I'm that guy that's like the person that never ships their code because they're constantly perfecting it, because you know as soon as you put out in the world that it's going to be criticized and you just can't deal with that. So I have like a bunch of things that I would like at both a team level and individual level that I think roll up to whether a manager is effective. But one of the big ones for me is, how tight are your feedback loops on the team? If your feedback loops on a team, if it takes a really long time to figure out something's broken within your team, whether it's because people are too scared to raise a flag or, you know, people don't pause long enough to reflect often enough, how long does it take to find out that there's a bug in your organizational system is a big one for me. And then what's the blast radius of when those things do occur, and how fast do you recover from those types of things? Whether it's, you know, putting bad stuff into production, or I view it as file an organizational bug when somebody has to work a late night to, you know, get something out the door. Like, okay, let's do a little mini cultural postmortem on the fact that, you know, somebody had to pull heroic antics to make sure that our customers weren't negatively impacted by something that shouldn't have happened. So no customer was impacted, but the team was. Let's do a little bit of a retrospective on that. What is the damage? How long does it take to recover? How quick are your feedback loops to tinker with the processes that you're using? I think that's a really big one that managers can have a huge impact on if they're doing their jobs well, is they're tightening those feedback loops where they find that they're long.
Yeah, but I think these are things that as a developer, especially if you're at that point where you're considered a senior developer in an organization, are going to be very similar metrics to how you would measure your output on the team. How long does it take for something, when it does go wrong, how long does it take for you to know that it went wrong? Did you have the things in place to measure your code so that you were able to work with it? Are you able to isolate changes, especially big changes, in a way that doesn't take the whole site down? But if something goes wrong, the blast radius is contained. So both of those metrics that you've mentioned there, I think, are things that a lot of developers are already going to feel really comfortable measuring themselves with. It's just you're kind of shifting things around a little bit, and it's more organizational rather than explicitly about the product.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Because you just take one step back and look at a team level and say, individually in the code that I ship, I'm accountable for the tightness of the feedback loops and small blast radius of code stuff that we ship. But take one step back and it's, well, who's in charge of the entire deployment process for this team? Like, well, we collectively are. So when you step back and there's a team level accountability for something, making sure that the team has the ability to spend time doing that, that there's space and room to improve those things. Well, that's where a manager can actually make an impact. And another thing on the feedback loops, like there's lead time, cycle time, and I actually literally don't remember the difference between the two. I don't do enough project management to remember those offhand, but they're, you know, the idea of how long it takes an idea to get from concept to work has begun on it to it's shipped and in customers' hands and people are deriving value from it is a meta measurement that I wouldn't expect a developer to hold in their head while they're solving difficult technical problems. And maybe your organization has project managers doing this. It's usually like a yes and no type of situation. And the engineering manager is holding a big part of that responsibility. And so when I'm talking about meta feedback loops like that of, and then making sure that once that does go out, that the engineers understand what happened with it. I've worked on a lot of teams that have no idea what happened with their code once it goes to production. Who's pulling, you know, who's closing the loop on that and making sure the engineering team is aware of the impact their code is having on their customers and whether that, you know, what we learned from the experiment of shipping this thing to those people. And I've, you know, you may be partnering with a product team to do that, but all of those things I think fall loosely under the category of how I would know an engineering manager was effective. And that's a lot of disparate responsibilities that are hard to sort of unify. That's why I'm like, I would really like this to not be a list of 15 measures, right? You don't want 15 OKRs, you want a couple. And so I'm looking to, as I learn this craft better, I'm looking to categorize these more broadly. So the question I will kick back to you is, how do you know when you're doing a good job? What does it feel like?
Do I get to paraphrase the Supreme Court Justice and his definition of obscenity? I feel like this is one of those things. It's always been a little bit different for me. Every team, based on what they've needed, has had different measures that I can look to and say, okay, yeah, this is moving along well. But every time it's been a little bit different. So it's one of those things I know it when I see it or when I feel it, but it's not something that I think I can, it's always in retrospect. It's not in a forward looking, okay, if I can check these boxes, this is going to be moving well.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I think one of the things that worries me about my practice of management is I feel like I do a lot of things right by accident. Like I've just got good instincts around some of these things and I don't really have a lot of definition around what it is I do. I just read the team in productive ways and can help fix things. And so I struggle to come up with a concrete answer to this question as well. I think it's a little easier to maybe come up with a productive answer to the question, how will your boss know you're doing a good job? Because I think Travis is right. I can kind of tell when the team's meshed and when things are going well and when it's not and when there's a lot of conflict and I need to figure out what's going awry with the system. But it's harder for me to answer, how will my boss know I'm doing a good job? Because you can't give sort of a gut feel answer to that one.
I totally agree with that. And actually, I think for a lot of managers, maybe the answer to the question of how do you know when you're doing a good job is, well, when I trust my boss and they tell me I'm doing a great job. And I've been in situations, the reason that I'm so hung up on this question is I've been in situations where I couldn't necessarily trust the feedback of my boss. It's either uniformly negative or uniformly positive in a way that I can't read. And so I've always been pretty self-reliant on that stuff. But I think if you have an environment where, hey, I know that I'm going to get feedback about how things are going. So in reasonably healthy organizations, that actually is the same question. How does my boss know I'm doing a good job? And like you said, it's difficult to even get an answer for that.
But I think that what you just said right there, Brandon, is really instructive to especially the newer managers who started listening to this hoping they would get the magic bullet of, oh, this is all I got to do and I'll be doing a good job. If you personally have trouble knowing whether or not you're doing a good job, if your boss isn't giving you some honest feedback, then how are the people who report to you going to be able to know that they're doing a good job if you're not giving them that same honest feedback? So when you have that tendency, which I think everybody does for at least a portion of their career, when you have that tendency to say, I'm just going to gloss over this because it wasn't that bad, or I don't need to bring this up. That's an opportunity for you to help build that trust with the people who report to you.
So the last thing I want to cover, because this was a part of the original question that Nick and I were sort of texting back and forth about, is what you do when you're an organization that doesn't get it. Because there are organizations that don't get this, that don't know that the nature of the work is nuanced and often invisible. I have worked in an organization where it was small and I reported directly to a CEO and the CEO said, I went to him and said, we have major cultural problems. I foresee turnover. We've got to work on some of these things. There's low trust on the team. There's a low sense of safety and I need to like get to work on some of these cultural problems. And the CEO came back and said, I don't know what you're talking about. The software is shipping. As far as I'm concerned, everything's fine. And I was like, oh no, I'm like undone by the fact that the team is actually productive when I know that they're productive in spite of these problems and not because we don't need to do anything about them. So I'm wondering what if y'all have experience with like how to deal in organizations that maybe don't share that view and how to survive or cope or improve things, like if the signal is an improvement of some kind.
So the advice that I can offer there, which I'm going to caveat is coming from a place of privilege. If you're not in a position where you can change that culture, you need to change where you're at. There's two ways to change the culture. It's change the culture or change the culture. You have two options. You can stick around and try to make it the culture that works for you, or you can find that culture that actually works for you. One of those two would be my recommendation. And that's a very hard one inside on my part. I've stayed at many a job way too long. And in retrospect, when I look back on it with the clarity of a few months or a few years to reflect on my time there, I realized, oh, it was that thing and that event and this change here. Those were the things. There was no way I was going to be able to have the kind of impact that I was looking for and be effective just because the organization didn't match what I was looking for. So I think it's that tendency to think, oh, I can fix it. I can change it. Organizations are bigger than we are. And I think it's really important to find one that meshes well with you and challenges you to make you better, but not one that's in direct opposition.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I think, you know, some of it depends on the size of the organization, because if you're in a small enough organization, you're going to have enough influence that you can sort of nudge this the direction that you want it to go. If you're in a larger organization with a very established management practice that is contrary to the way that you want to be a manager, I think Travis is probably exactly right. You're probably not going to change that culture directly, so you need to change the culture that you exist in and find a new job. But if you're in that smaller organization and you're trying to shift it, I think one of the things that you have to do is spend the time to develop your personal leading metrics. What are the things that you care about in the way that you lead a team? And the power in doing that is you can measure yourself and you can get a good feel for, if I pay attention to these indicators, then I have some faith that I'm going to get good output from the team at the end of whatever period I'm working in, be it the quarter, the year, whatever it is. And over time, you can teach your boss the things that you measure yourself by. You can find ways to bring that up casually and productively in conversation where you're not saying, this is the way that the organization should measure managers, but instead you're teaching them about the patterns of success that you've found in hopes that that will spread to the broader organization.
That's a really good point. And I think something I'm reminded of periodically, that if you know that you're following success patterns, you really have a lot more influence than you think you do usually to say, hey, do you like these types of results? Let's figure out how to reverse engineer those results and bring it to other areas as well. And that starts with documentation. And here's a ladder, and here are the traits and activities that we want to invest in to say, this looks like success here. And that's open for, you know, to take people to take pot shots at and say, well, that doesn't reflect my style. And let me show you how I do it. Great. We'll, you know, broaden it to encompass more styles, but you have to start somewhere. That one thing I will say, though, is I know, Nick, you and I have both been in a situation where we thought we were dealing with a skills gap and we were trying to teach our small organization, where we had lots of influence over an organization. We thought we were teaching the skills to the organization, but it turns out we were actually trying to imbue them with our values. And when you run across a values mismatch, then I would pull the Travis lever and say, hey, this is the time. Like, you're not going to actually change the culture of your company. You're not going to change its cultural values, but you might be able to dramatically change the culture of the company through changing its skills. Like, maybe there's an unskilled way to measure managers, and you can raise those up if your values are aligned. But if your values are out of alignment and you discover that, please be very realistic about how often companies actually change their values.
And the thing to call out about that, one of the harder won lessons in my career, is that stated values often matter very little. The values that we're actually looking for here are the values that an organization actually practices.
Inversely proportional. They're practiced inversely proportional in my experience to how many of them are stenciled on the walls. And I'll just leave that there. But this is not referring to one specific organization. This is a multitude in my experience. So Yeah. And so, you know, observe the values of the company. I asked during an interview with a company recently, hey, I really love these values. Are they observational or are they aspirational? And they went, huh, good question. Neither. I think they're emergent. And I was like, oh, I've never heard that answer before. Like they're currently being invested in. They're like, they're not aspirational because we're on track to like imbue those into the organization. Work has already begun and it's work and it's happening. Like, oh, that's a really interesting answer. Like I've never seen a company whose values are in transition where the values themselves are sort of emergent. So, you know, just be on the lookout for whether those conflict with your personal values, they jibe with your personal values, and you're going to have to take time to observe. This, a lot of this stuff takes time. You're not going to know a month into your job the answer to these questions. And that's, yeah, that sucks because you want to know, am I doing well? Is it the right place? Am I home? You know, and it's just, nope. Good luck knowing the answer to that within your first 6 months at all.
I mean, one of these days we have to go back and see how many times we say this, but I think management in a nutshell can be boiled down to a lot of these things take time.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you're used to showing up and being able to open a pull request on your first day, again, this is like making the transition into management where you go from being a person that's like, I'm going to go close this bug hunter. And then you go start managing. And you're like, all right, now I'm hunting for bugs in the organization. I'm going to fix this and this and this. And you're like, oh, no, that's not what this is. You can weed the garden. That's fine. But this is a very different space. People change a lot less frequently, smoothly, and happily than a code base does. Code bases are hard enough. But people changes are way, way harder. Well, on that extremely inconclusive note, I think it's probably best that we tie things up. I know that like we didn't set out to answer the question, how do you measure the output of a manager?
And it's a good thing because we didn't.
We did not do that. Yeah. And please no one ask us that. I mean, obviously, like I don't want to be the it depends guy because I really hate that, but it really is contingent on so many different factors that are at play at different workplaces that it's very difficult to give a conclusive answer right now. And I would be very suspicious of somebody who tried to. They're like, oh, I did it. Here's my framework for measuring your managers. And like you said, Nick, that's going to become pathological real quick with the incentivization structures around that. So I'd be very suspicious of it. But you do want to be able to know with beyond just, this works for me, therefore do what I did. I'd really like to have something better than that. So
yeah,
I'm assuming it's emergent.
You're describing so many self-help books. Like it's that's 80% of all books in that genre is, hey, I did this. It worked for me. Look how successful I am. You should just do what I did.
Oh man. And like you said, Travis, like that comes from often an unacknowledged position of privilege of some kind. Like they're completely blind to the fact that their situation set them up to succeed. And they were just there, like they were born on third and thought they hit a triple type of situation. And so I definitely don't want to fall into that trap, but I do think it is possible for managers that are in their, you know, first year with a new company or in their first few years of the role to start getting their arms around what performance actually looks like for them in a way that they can kind of start selling upward. And if your organization, we would love to know, actually, if you have feedback, please get at us at Managing Up Show. Let us know what you've done in the past. Let us know if you have frameworks for measuring success of a manager. I'd love to learn and hear more about this. If people have blog posts or book recommendations, we've read a lot of books, but nothing that made me feel, you know, conclusively, like I know how to measure this stuff. So please do get at us. If you want to get a hold of the show, again, we're at Managing Up Show. I am Tev Eiking on Twitter.
I'm N Means on Twitter.
And I'm T Swyska just about everywhere.
And as always, we'd love to hear from you. If you have feedback for the show, the best thing that you could do to help us actually is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, share it with your friends, or get a hold of us. Thanks everybody for joining us, and we will see you again next time.